and welcome to the Ghosts and Folklore Podcast. I'm Mark Rees, and on each episode, I investigate a different, weird, and wonderful subject. And on this episode, we are going to explore a good old-fashioned haunting, a ghost story that combines fact and fiction, reality and hearsay, a paranormal encounter from centuries gone by in which a real-life tragedy does indeed occur, and which folklore tells us was caused by some rather diabolical circumstances and has left people posing the question, what was really going on? Is this simply an unfortunate incident, or was there something more uncanny taking place? Well, I shall tell you the story, and I will let you, dear listener, make up your own mind. And so, to begin, at the beginning. And this tale is called The Legend of Hafod Uchdryd, and it was recorded in the late 1800s. And it's the kind of story I used to look at quite often in the early days of this podcast. Long-term listeners will find lots of familiar elements in these stories. They are stories that are based on genuine historical events. But there are things that happen in them that are so extraordinary, you do start to question, at what point does reality drift into fiction? But on the other hand, of course, they do also say that the truth is stranger than fiction. And who am I to doubt it? Maybe every single detail in this tale is 100% genuine. Now, at the time of writing this story in the 19th century, Hafod Uchdryd, the place of the title, Hafod Uchdryd was a big fancy mansion. The name Uchtred itself means summer mansion, and it was in the Ustwyth Valley in Ceredigion, very close to Devil's Bridge, another place I've spoken about on this podcast in one of the very first episodes, in fact, if you wanted to check that out afterwards. But back to this mansion, which was demolished in 1958. Which means, sadly, if you enjoy this tale, you can't visit it today. You can, of course, visit the site of it, I'm assuming. You can stand where it once stood. But the mansion itself is no longer there. The estate is, the wooded estate is there, but the mansion isn't, which means we have to rely on descriptions from the time. And our narrator begins the tale by posing the question, who has not heard of the beautiful mansion of Mr. Johns of Hafod Uchdryd? Well, it's safe to say everybody listening to this podcast has heard of the beautiful mansion of Mr. Johns of Hafod Uchdryd, because I've spent the last few minutes talking about it. But to continue, who has not heard of the beautiful mansion of Mr. Johns of Hafod Uchdryd with its grand library, its collection of antiques from all parts of the world, its eastern treasures, its fine gallery of paintings? And not throughout all of Wales was there a mansion that was such a casket of gems as Hafod Uchdryd. So, all in all, it sounds like the ideal setting for a good old-fashioned ghost story. But before we get to the spookiness, I did say there was some real-life tragedy involved, especially if you are an art lover, because one wild night, this precious casket was attacked by that fierce foe of art treasures, not ghosts, but fire. And when the next day had passed, all that was left was a smouldering heap of ruins. The entire mansion, all of those treasures inside, was burnt to the ground. And this did indeed happen in the year 1807. Mr. Johns himself at the time was away on business in London, but his house and all, or presumably the majority of his valuables, were lost to the flames. Now, our narrator tells us that it is not of art that I am going to write, nor am I going to add one more lamentation to the many which have been passed over the great national loss sustained by the destruction of the priceless library. As I'm sure you can imagine, if this were to happen today, it would very much be headline news. In fact, that amount of valuables would probably be in a museum by this point. But nevertheless, our narrator is not going to lament over the loss of priceless art because, as we all know, he's here to talk about ghosts. And he tells us that my aim is to tell the legend of Hafod Uchdryd. And of all legends, it is one of the most weird. And there's nothing we like more on this podcast than things that are most weird. Now, that's all the build-up stuff, the background stuff out of the way. We've set the scene, we've described the location. Let's get on with the weird stuff. And our narrator even prefixes this account with a quick disclaimer. And he says, to quote, "I must not be supposed to place implicit faith in the legend." So right from the start, he is distancing himself from this account, almost to say, other people might believe this. Me personally, oh, I'm far too clever. But other people, yes, I'm sure they do. And as if to reinforce how many people out there do indeed believe in this tale, he tells us that in the neighbourhood around Aberystwyth, say for a circle embracing 20 square miles, the people were, at the time and have been since, held this story in strong belief and recount it with extreme earnestness. So he's effectively saying a heck of a lot of people in and around Aberystwyth believe this to be true. And who are we, who is this narrator, to be doubting the good people of Aberystwyth? He also adds that these narrations are not the so-called old women's tales. And they are his words, not mine, in inverted commas. These are not old women's tales. Rather, bluff men, well-to-do farmers, intelligent traders do tell these stories and tell them seriously. And with an air which says more strongly than words, believe it or not, I do. So if this story is good enough for well-to-do farmers and intelligent traders, who are we to doubt it? Now, when this mansion of Mr. John's was in its prime before it burnt to the ground, there was a rumour current in the neighbourhood that it was haunted. It had a reputation for being haunted. And the haunting took a different form to the common run, we are told. No white form flitted through the hall and vestibule. No strange sounds were heard. No rattling of chains. No conflict between exasperated shades, ending with a sudden lunge and a dying groan. There was none of this. So apologies if you have tuned in hoping for the traditional ghostly activity. There are no white forms floating around here. There's no sudden lunges. There's no dying groans and clanking chains. There'll be none of that. Instead, the haunting was said to be done by a mischievous, but also a rather humorous sprite. And the chief scene of his vagaries was in the stables. The stables were the area targeted primarily by this mischievous sprite. And if Mr. Johns wanted a horse saddled quickly, the moment it was done, everything would be taken off by invisible hands. Demure mares would suddenly become restive. Busy stablemen would get lumps of turf thrown at them and would be obliged to run away in fear and trembling. And when they returned, it was to find everything in disorder. Combs and brushes lying about in all sorts of places. Harnesses piled up in a heap. And in fact, just such a condition of things as one might expect from the hands of a practical joker. So this activity in which objects are thrown at the people working in the stables, they run away in fear, and when they are brave enough to return, they find the place has been totally trashed, everything is a mess. This activity is being compared to the work of a practical joker. But for those of us with an interest in such spooky affairs, which I imagine is most people listening to this podcast, there is one word in particular that might pop into our minds at about now, and that is poltergeist. It does sound like we've drifted into poltergeist territory. Objects being thrown about the place, objects being thrown at people, and the whole place left in chaos and disarray. It sounds like classic poltergeist territory. And so terrifying were these events that, to continue, after the mansion had been destroyed, after it was burnt down, Mr. Johns seriously thought that it was advisable not to rebuild it, because of course the mansion is not there now. He thought it advisable not to rebuild it, because what was the use of restoring a place for the imps to just trash the place again? What was the point of rebuilding if this poltergeist, if indeed that's what it was just going to play the same tricks again and again? And besides, the current opinion, and this is in the late 1800s, but the current opinion was that it was not elves or fairies who had done these things, but they were the work of the old gentleman in his sportive moods, as if Nicholas was ever sportive. And just to clarify that last bit for you slightly, the old gentleman and Nicholas are words that were used by the good, honest Christian Welsh people to describe the devil himself. The devil's name was rarely said aloud. In fact, when people did say it, they would spit on the floor or they would curse it afterwards. But old gentleman refers to the evil one himself. Nicholas, old Nick, refers to Satan. So they did not think it was a poltergeist. In their minds, the devil himself walked among them. And to get back to the tale, and while Mr. Johns was debating in his own mind the propriety of rebuilding, he was told, a graduate of Oxford, and back in the old days you could always rely on a graduate of Oxford, a graduate of Oxford had come to reside in the locality, and he just happened to possess special power in laying evil spirits, with laying in this sense, of course, meaning to banish, to exorcise evil spirits. This was an opportunity not to be lost. Just when you need someone to help with laying evil spirits, an expert from Oxford turns up nearby. And a message was sent to the Oxford gentleman to call upon Mr. Johns. And in due time, he came, and a long conference took place during which the visitor was told of the extraordinary doings which had occurred prior to the burning down of the mansion. And when this Oxford gentleman was brought fully up to speed with the antics of whatever supernatural being had been tormenting Mr. Johns, he asked him directly, straight to the point. He said, "Can you get rid of this tormentor?" To which the man from Oxford promptly replied, "I can," which is exactly what Mr. Johns wanted to hear, the two magic words, "I can." And we are in slightly unusual territory here, and I do feel like I say that on every episode, because we do talk about a lot of unusual rubbish. But in this case, this man from Oxford is about to attempt to banish, to exorcise the devil from a house that has been burnt down. So the house itself does not exist as it once did. This is the haunted husk of a house, the haunted ruins of a house. What is the point? Why waste time trying to banish something from a property that has already been destroyed? The devil has already won, by the sounds of it. Well, as it turns out, there is a good reason for this, because we are told that since the destruction of the house, the activity has continued amongst the ruins. The tormentor is still up to their tricks in the ruins. So it doesn't specifically say what indeed was going on, but this paranormal activity had not finished when the house burnt down, so we'll have to use our imagination for that, but maybe it was just throwing bits of ash around, bits of half-burned timber, I don't know, but whatever it was up to, they wanted to put a stop to it, and put a stop to it for good this time. And it was decided that the process of laying should take place in the ruins. They would attempt to conduct this exorcism in the ruins of the burnt down building. And I mentioned at the start, this story does seem to blend fact and fiction. And the area where fiction starts to creep in, where people start to doubt some of the details, is the exorcism itself. Because up until now, we can say for a fact, this house did indeed burn down. And people reporting poltergeist activity continues to this day. However, the description of the exorcism is very much of its time, let's say, but let me tell you the events and then we can unpack it all at the end. And so they arrange to meet at the ruins, and our narrator tells us that It was a serious undertaking, this laying of the evil spirit, and arrangements for the ceremony were conducted with all the gravity that the occasion demanded. Mr. Johns and a friend or two were in attendance, and together all were in the ruins of the stable, because as we know, the stable was the main point of this activity, and this of course tells us the stable also burnt down. But all were in the ruins of the stable when, selecting an open place, the Oxford man drew a large circle into which they all stepped, a magical circle on the ground, and then, opening a book, the performer in chief went through various incantations. So it all sounds very mystical so far, a little bit devil rides out, you might say. Drawing a circle, opening a book, and reading some incantations, which, at the end of these, a loud roar was heard, a loud roar, and then a bull appeared. Yes, bull, B-U-L-L, bull, as in one half of a Minotaur, or the red variety that keep winning Formula One races. A bull, exceedingly savage in appearance, dashed at them with so much fierceness that all in the circle gave themselves up as lost. They assumed the end was nigh. This bull was charging with such anger and ferocity that the moment it hit them smack, their lives would be over. And they were only restrained from making a mad effort to escape by the Oxford man, who counseled calmness, who stopped them from running away and told them that nothing would pass the line, nothing would pass into that circle they were standing in unless he willed it. So, a big bull appears, it charges at them, but they are presumably safe as long as they are inside that circle. And if you are wondering why there's a bull charging at them, which is a perfectly reasonable question at this stage, well, again, this is something I've gone into in more depth on previous episodes, but very briefly, it was believed that spirits or demons or poltergeists or whatever you want to call these things could take on the form of an animal. Any kind of animal, big or small, in the Welsh tales they are traditionally farmyard animals, or at least animals that were native to Wales, to the natural habitats in Wales. In this case, we can assume that whatever was haunting, whatever was tormenting this property has taken the form of a bull, and that is what is trying to attack them, to savage them inside that circle. And to continue, the mad bull, for such it seemed, glared at them almost face to face, and then disappeared. Just like that, it was gone. The bull disappeared. So the bull, it would appear, had been defeated, and the incantations continued. But with that, a ferocious bulldog sprang at them with glistening teeth and staring eyes, and again, they were only restrained from flight by the strong arm of their friend. And to interrupt again quickly, as I'm sure you've gathered, but these spirits could take on any form they wanted and to switch forms. So if the bull didn't work, presumably the same spirit has reappeared now as a bulldog. And with the bulldog not working, in the utmost apprehension, those gathered inside the circle now waited for the third appearance, which was to be the last. But there was no roar to be heard, no barking, no howling. In fact, an intense calm seemed to prevail. The bulldog was gone, the bull was gone, and all was silent. And this continued for a time when a faint buzz sounded above and over the circle. Then that crafty devil had found a way to defy the charm, because he had transformed into a fly. And by flying over the circle, they no longer needed to worry about crossing it on the ground. And that fly, from his vantage point above, could see the weapon that was being used against him, that book of incantations from which the man from Oxford was reading. And quietly, stealthily, that fly lowered down from above, down towards the man from Oxford, and landed on the pages of that open book. But he did not fly totally undetected, as assumed. And in a moment, the enchanter closed the volume. He slammed the book shut and with a loud cry exclaimed, "I have got him! The devil is in a trap." And you probably don't need to be psychic to have seen that one coming, but the book was closed with a fly inside. And to continue, and sure enough, from the mysterious book came a voice of supplication. The devil was trapped, the devil was squished, and it pleaded that if only they let him escape, he would never trouble the house again. His prayer was most pitiable. There was nothing that he would not consent to, and be bound by the most solemn oath. Only let him be free. But this was a delicate matter. I mean, you know, they were making a deal with the devil, of course it was delicate, but it was a delicate matter, and it required long consultations and discussion before an agreement could be brought about. You know, the devil is a tricky character. He's pretty good at making deals in his favour, so you can't rush in to a deal with the devil. And finally, it was agreed that the evil spirit should take itself away to a very appropriately named local landmark. It was just down the road, and it was called the Devil's Bridge. Good old Devil's Bridge, one of the first folk tales I looked at on this podcast. And there, with an ounce hammer and a tin tack, he was instructed to cut off a fathom of the rock. If he would consent to that, then he should be liberated. And to interrupt again quickly here, and I won't go into this in too much depth here, because again, it's something I've covered on previous episodes, but this was quite a common way of effectively trapping demons, devils, evil spirits, whatever you want to call these creatures, for eternity, where you give them a task that is so nigh on impossible to complete, it will either occupy them for the rest of time, or if not the rest of time, it will certainly keep them quiet for a century or two. Such as in this case, where he's got a small hammer and a tin tack, and he has to cut off a ridiculous amount of rock. That would keep the devil quiet for a very, very long time, unless, of course, he found a way of weaseling his way out of it. And while in this case, the nature of the oath and how they bound the devil to do this task is not stated, we do know that the good people in the neighbourhood say, in Aberystwyth and the surrounding areas, that the old gentleman, again, this is code for the devil, the old gentleman consented to the terms and was forthwith released. They further add that if you go to the Devil's Bridge and get down by the side of the water and stoop low, you will hear the steady tap of the ounce hammer as the unfortunate tormentor labours away at his impossible task. More than this, gossips say that from that day there was no more haunting, and men and horses had perfect peace at Hafod Uchtred. And I would imagine it is still perfectly peaceful today, now that the house has gone, now that the devil has gone. In fact, you could go there and have a lovely day out in the glorious countryside without worrying about any of that paranormal stuff. Of course, if you go to Devil's Bridge instead, things might work out slightly differently. You might encounter, or at least hear, the diabolical one by the sounds of it. And if you are wondering how Devil's Bridge came to get such a diabolical name, well, I explained all of that a good few years ago now, all the way back on episode 6. So be sure to go back into the archives to dig that one out if you'd like to know more. And on that note, we've reached the end of another episode of the Ghosts and Folklore podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you haven't already, please consider pressing the subscribe button and you will never miss an episode ever. If you really enjoyed it, you can support the podcast by rating it, reviewing it, and telling your friends about it. And if you really, really enjoyed the podcast and you want to support it going forward, you can treat me to a coffee via my website, which is always very much appreciated and goes towards keeping this podcast on the air. If you'd like more Ghosts and Folklore, you can follow me on social media. I'm on all the main platforms. And as well as this podcast, I've also written a number of books about similar weird and wonderful subjects, which are available from all good bookshops, offline and on. And on that note, it just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening. Diolch and varian am rando. I've been Mark Rhys. This has been my Ghosts and Folklore podcast, beaming to you from Wales to the world. And remember, if you do find yourself lost in Devil's Bridge and hear the sound of tapping, it might be best to make a sharp exit, because he has been tapping away for quite a few centuries now. And if my maths are correct, that devil is going to be breaking free any second now. Until next time, Nosta.